No, you can't say that on there. I'm not even going to address the death metal community. You know what it is? It's MDF. MDF is in the air. Everyone's getting wild. My co-host, Terrell Granum, this evening. Welcome, Terrell.
How you doing? MDF, Terrell Granum.
By the way. Yeah.
Not sponsored.
MDF fever in the air. Definitely not sponsored. We're in like a dozen bands. Nobody's playing. Listen, it's MDF fever. Everybody's going nuts. And I think that's why these people come up with these crazy things. Is the relapse message board still a thing? Maybe that's where these allegations begin. I have no idea. The idea that I'm smoking Hepworth brand New York State legal cannabis flower Gorilla Punch with a total THC percentage of 25.14%. I don't know where these people come up with these things. But listen, whatever helps you sleep at night, guys, enjoy your festivities. Terrell, how you been, though? What's going on, man?
I'm good. I'm very proud of you supporting local business. You know, if it's from that alleged place, it has to be grown in New York.
Allegedly.
That's off to some farmer.
Yeah, I support local potato chip producers, too. I support everybody.
Exactly.
Sad news today. From your part of town, respect. You're a Brooklyn native.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, rest in peace, Mr. C.
RIP.
Yeah. Sad day. We also lost Christopher Cross this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah. He's sailing on that big sailboat in the sky.
Yeah.
Or he's really going down to Mexico, running like the wind. Either way, rest in peace to those two great stalwart mountains of music.
True. That was way more eloquent.
Yeah, I was looking for the right word. I was actually looking for the word pillar. These allegations that these people say I smoke weed or whatever the hell. I don't know. But listen, Terrell, what's been going on though lately though with you? Because is there anything going on with Thetis? Is there anything to speak of with your band?
Yeah, Thetis. We're about to start recording the album.
Yeah.
Probably going to be recording drums in about a week or so, week or two. And then that's going to be lay the foundation for about, I think, 8 or 9 new songs.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll get that shipped out.
Very exciting.
Nice and quick.
Pat's like tap dancing on a guitar. Like, you know, the scene from Big where that movie Big, the classic 80s hit with Tom Hanks, they do like the chopsticks on the big piano that you have to step on.
Okay.
I'm picturing you and Pat on a guitar the size of a room, and you're doing something like that.
Beautiful.
Playing these riffs, these competent.
It looks like death metal lap steel.
It would look more like an Irish step dance the way you guys play those riffs, though. Yeah, man. Listen, shout out to you guys, Thetis. Love you guys. We're trying to work. You're in the mix behind the scenes. One of my bands, one of our friends' bands, one of your bands, allegedly all trying to do things behind the scenes.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
We'll see what happens, man. If we hit the stage or not. They're trying to keep me off the stage, Terrell. I'm getting paranoid over here.
Dude, we've been a shadow band.
Yeah, I've been shadow banned.
IRL.
Yeah, I've been shadow banned IRL, man. I don't know what's going on out here, bro. I'm hit me up. I do more than just interview bands. I think it's like that when I first started this podcast, I used to tell Tom all the time, we would sit there for about 5.5 hours after recording a podcast, just drinking bottles of scotch, and I would be like, listen, man, but what's going to happen the day the pendulum swings full and I'm a podcaster more than a death metal artist? And I think that day has come. Yeah, so hit us up for bookings for any of my bands.
Yeah, let's reset the scales a little bit.
Yeah, oh, man. No, we're joking, man. We're writing... with Reek, we're writing some new material behind the scenes. Looking forward to that, man. And we actually got, I don't want to talk about the other thing yet. We're supposed to meet a guy. He's a little wacky. I don't know if he's going to show up. I don't know if he may or may not know how to play drums. Literally, IRL.
Yeah.
But we got a few
things. It's not a hint.
Yeah,
all.
We got a few things cooking behind the scenes, man. It's not the Hudson. He does know how to play drums, man. Other than that, I got a project I'm working on. Little project on the side there coming. It's going to be the first time I'm using the podcast studio here to record vocals. on my own. Like, I've done a couple little backing track things, but like the first time I'm just using it for a project. So I'm a little excited about that, man. It's like my just trying to like pretend that I'm still a vocalist of, you know, a death metal vocalist and not just a full time broke podcaster. That's the way of the world, man. I'm not the Nelk boys over here. It's not going well.
I mean, you're gonna reveal any more details, or is that a we just keep it under wraps?
Under contract. Yeah, can't yet.
This is the NDA period, right?
Yeah. I got a lot of shit under contract. Dude, there's a couple of things I can't talk about right now, man. Good and bad. I saw
Tupac?
Saw a picture. Wait. Whoa, no. I didn't. I saw a picture of two jackasses today, man. On Instagram, man. I forgot to share that to the group text, man. These guys. I have a lot. Yeah, I don't want to get in trouble here, man. But shout to the old school guys, man. We love the old school guys here on Heavy Hole Podcast, man. And one such old school guy, I got to sit down recently with none other than PH of Lord Alfred's Rot and Roll. That is the IG you can check him out on. He's from the bands Casket Wretch, Lord Alfred, and Warhorde. You may know him from Warhorde, who's released several albums on Barbarian Wrath Records. We're going to get into it all with this OG of all things underground and independent spirited metal. Okay, this is Big Will from the Heavy Hole Podcast, and I'm here with PH, the mysterious entity behind such projects as Casket Wretch, Lord Alfred, and Warhorde. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me, man.
Of course. I'm glad we were able to set this up. And I was familiarized with you through your recent release, Casket Wretch and Lord Pappas split tape. And split 7-inch, I should say, that was just recently released. Lord Pappas being a local weirdo who deals in music and records in my neighborhood. Shout out to Tim. We love Tim, man. A former guest of the show. And we got you on now. So, PH, before we get into all that and talk about your current projects that you're working on, what you got planned for the future, and this latest split tape, I want to know all about that. We always start at the beginning. Are you from a musical family? Or were there any musicians in your upbringing or anyone that kind of steered you towards hard rock and heavy metal as you were growing up?
I mean, musical, no one was musical in the sense that they played an instrument or anything. But I mean, I guess I'd have to go back to my father and mother. I mean, they were always playing music. My father was big into fucking Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley, man. And I mean, being like 4 and 5, listening to that shit, that was kind of mind blowing, you know. And then my mother was actually, it was, you know, very into like the acid rock, was into Janis Joplin, Jefferson Airplane, and shit like that. So, and from there, I kind of like discovered Hendrix. I mean, I was actually a big Animals fucking fan when I was a kid, when I was like 4, you know, like 5 and 6. So.
Okay, and you're of a generation where you kind of watched heavy metal from its emergence from hard rock and heavy metal. When do you recall things taking a turn for the more metal? Like, was there a specific band? Was there a year in your life? You know, I don't know.
I mean, like I said, I mean, so yeah, I guess whatever. I'm a little older. I hate to admit that, but you know. So growing up, everyone in my age when I was a kid was still listening to like the fucking Beatles and the Doors. And don't get me wrong, man, I love some Doors shit, but I mean, it came to me like I was more into like the hardcore punk when it came around, like Black Flag fucking blew my mind. You know what I mean? But metal, I mean, I gotta say. So there was a dude we were hanging out. And we were smoking some pot and shit, which I don't do anymore. So, And he was playing some Man of War, and I was like, well, that's, I don't know, that's kind of cheesy, man, you know? And I think it was Hail to England when it came out. And I said to him, that's kind of fucking wimpy, man. And he said, I got something for you. And it was fucking Welcome to Hell from Venom. And when he dropped that needle, that fucking changed my world, man.
I know Venom is very important to you, just judging on your social media and maybe the influence of some of your projects.
Yeah, no doubt. Venom and Motorhead are it, man.
So we don't want your street address, but I mean, what area are you from originally?
I'm actually from Chester, New York.
That's upstate a little bit from us here.
Yeah, right? A little backwoods town. Yeah.
Okay, so getting into this kind of music up there, especially in that era, that, you know, pre-internet, pre-cell phone era, was it a little bit harder for you to discover music? Was there a record store? How far did you have to travel? Were you able to see shows?
I mean, a lot of it was word of mouth. A lot of it was still tape trading. A lot of it was, you know, it was just guys being guys and being like, hey, check this out, man. You know, that's how I came across, like, Discharge. And like I said, I'm very punk background, but I was very into metal, you know?
Yeah, and at the time, I mean, a band like Venom, it kind of seems like a natural jumping off point from being more into the old school punk and hardcore, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
Makes sense. And then what about Bathory or Celtic Frost, those more proto-like? Oh,
fucking Bathory blew my mind.
Yeah.
There was a record store locally in a mall, and I used to take a bus, and I used to buy records. They had, like, an import section. Mm. And at that time, again, you know, you couldn't judge music. You had to look at the cover. You couldn't download anything. You couldn't fucking, you know, let me fucking pre-sample. Get the fuck out of here. You were looking at fucking album covers, you know? And I saw that fucking yellow goat, and I'm like, I have to get this.
That's funny, because I imagine at that point in time, it couldn't have been that expensive brand new at that store, right?
No, you're talking like a $7 album, man.
In particular, the yellow goat copy is like a fabled record collector thing
exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's, do you still have it?
Unfortunately, I don't. I had an ex-girlfriend who walked off with all my stuff, man.
That sucks.
I had, like, Enemy, Unholy Death. I had Christ on Parade, First Breath. I mean, like, shit you wouldn't even believe.
I have a few lost white whales in my collection over the years from high school friends and things like that. Things that we didn't think were going to be worth money. Yeah, that happens, man. All right.
Yeah, so, like my Misfits collection, a buddy of mine. Hey, can I borrow this? I just want to tape it. Yeah, go ahead. Never saw it again, you know.
Were you able to see the Misfits or maybe any other bands that we would think of as like being household names nowadays, but in your day they were, you know, just more underground bands making the circuit?
I mean, unfortunately, I missed the Misfits. I mean, they didn't play. They actually didn't play around too much by me. You know, they kind of branched out. So I missed a lot of that. But when I was in high school, I actually dropped out of high school for a few months. And I moved to Jersey. And I joined a band, which never got anywhere. But at the time, we were rehearsing in a couple of spots in Fairlawn. And Whiplash were fucking there rehearsing. Adrenaline OD, Sacred Denial. So, like, it was a thing just to go see these bands. You'd go rehearse, and then you'd go watch these bands. And it was fucking great. You know what I mean?
New Jersey has a really rich history for extreme metal.
Yep.
Yeah. People always think New York City, they discount New Jersey a little bit, I think. And
exactly. And I love, listen, I'm New York. I love it. Yeah. But Jersey had a fucking scene, man. Mental abuse. Oof.
So let's backtrack a little bit, though. What age is guitar your first instrument?
It's actually bass.
Bass. What age do you pick up a bass?
Oh, shit. Probably about 12 or 13. I begged my father, man. I said, I got to get an instrument. You know, I got to do some shit. Whatever, you know. And I begged him and begged him. And my father's a hardcore dude. He was like, whatever. Yeah, okay, we'll take it. And he brought me the cheapest fucking piece of shit he could, you know. And I got like this K bass, this little like SG ripoff thing, and I started playing that, you know. But bass is my thing. Motorhead, man, fucking Lemmy. Lemmy turned me on to the bass.
I mean, so your mom and dad are hip to rock and roll. What do they think of things like punk rock and metal later on when that starts popping up?
Hated it, man. Hated it. Dude, I tormented my parents, right? So I get the bass and I'm trying to learn fucking Iron Man, right? And I would just play it like for 7 fucking hours. Bah, bah. Bop, 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 and I'd hit all the wrong notes, and my father would just yell at me, shut that fucking thing up, you know? Crazy.
All right, man. How long is it until you end up jamming with some other guys and you got a band going?
It was actually, it was not too long after, probably like 15, 16. So I started playing in like some local punk bands. We tried to get shit together. It never really worked, you know what I mean? It's just kid shit.
Were you guys where you're from? Was that just the wrong area? There wasn't an opportunity. There weren't venues. That's like it was tough, right?
Not a lot of venues. Not a lot of people doing it. So it was kind of rough. You had to make your own thing, you know.
With that in mind, did you feel like even more of an outsider because you were into this sort of stuff?
To the local? God, man, I hate that word, but yeah, it's just outsider shit.
I mean, that's the nature of it.
I know, but I get it.
You know, when you're in a city, you know, there's a little more.
There's a scene. A
little more forgiveness.
You can actually say it's a scene.
So, with that being said, you get into metal a little bit later. Your buddy plays you Manowar. You go, I don't know. He plays you Venom. You go, okay, we're
done, man. I'm done for life.
So then I imagine at that point you're trying to start a metal band or get involved with a metal band, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What comes next?
So I hooked up with a couple guys, and they're really good guys, man. Played well, and we ended up calling ourselves Paralysis.
Okay.
So we tried to think for a couple months, and it just, again, you're kids, man. It just, you're fucked up, you're partying. It just never worked out, you know? We just never held it together.
Yeah. All right. And then I know later on you end up in the band. Was it Alfred was the band?
Well, so, I mean, we can go way back. So I started in this band, Crank, which was like a hardcore punk band. But again, fuck, I hate to use this word outsider. It was kind of outsider shit. I mean, it was a little crossover. And we had a good run, you know. We did a lot of fucking dates. We did a lot of fucking playing, and that was good. And that's kind of when, whatever, they kicked me out. So
I've been kicked out of a band. Shit happens. life goes on.
They didn't like my fucking partying, so they kicked me out. Whatever.
Well, I mean, speaking of the 80s, you know, I'm 42, man. I came of age more in the 90s. I think in heavy metal culture, we tend to romanticize the 80s a little bit as this like really wild, crazy time with drugs and partying. And I mean, is that?
Well, there was, man. There was. I'm not going to fucking deny it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well.
It's not romanticizing. That was a way of life, dude. You know, that's what we did. We fucking played, we fucking did drugs, and we fucking partied.
Yeah, I joked around a little bit a few weeks ago on another episode about how, like, nowadays modern metal bands, it's like the people want the show to be over before midnight so they can go home and, like, binge-watch some shows on Netflix.
But back, right, and go to sleep, yep.
Back in the 80s, from all the stories I hear, it sounds like people wanted the show to go to 2 in the morning and then smoke dust until 6 in the morning, like, on a weekday.
And that's the way it was. That's what you wanted. Let's keep going, man. And dust was a big part of it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, it just, you know, I obviously maybe more dangerous times, but maybe something a little bit more substantial to the idea of a heavy metal lifestyle and culture in a way there too. I don't
right,
know.
Right. Right. And it's whatever. It's not nostalgic. It's just the way it was.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, the world was, it seems like the world was a lot smaller back then. Now drugs have gotten a lot scarier. Cocaine is less pure. Fentanyl, you know, you have the internet.
I can't touch any of that shit anymore, man.
Well, here's something that's been on my mind a lot, not like lately because I've been reading a few books, but it's always been part of this podcast, is the Satanic Panic era. This idea of teenagers going wild with occultism and drugs in the 80s. Yeah. I feel like back in the day, like nowadays, if kids want to know about occultism and subversive stuff, they can log onto the internet. It's all right there. Whereas back in the late 70s, 80s, it was like whatever information you could glean from somewhere, it was kind of like a you know, make it up as you go. There was a lot more mystery to it, I think. I mean, was that part of the culture where you were from with adolescent metalheads?
Absolutely. The Satanic Panic was real, dude. Like, parents were freaked. I used to have fucking, like, and going back again, when I was like 12, even 13, I would put posters on my wall, fucking Venom, Motorhead, whatever, you know, whatever fucking Sodom, Bathory. And my fucking father would come down and rip them out and fucking, you're fucking evil. He fucking threw out all my fucking albums at one time, my Motorheads, everything, just fucking tossed them out. And he sat me down and was like, you gotta fucking get religion. Like, no, what are you talking about, man? This shit is not fucking evil, you know? But it was real to the parents.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess that, you know, they would sensationalize the isolated cases of kids who took it too far.
Exactly. The suicide, whatever, you know?
I mean, you're going to, it's kind of, there's a parallel there. I was watching this documentary on the Insane Clown Posse and how the FBI targeted their fans as a gang, which regardless of how you like their albums, that's kind of crazy. And the one guy said, he was like, we have a million fans, comb, you know, put a comb through that and you're going to find one of anything. Same could be said for heavy metal, you know?
Exactly. You're going to find a one nut job, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but people forget, you got that case like the, what was it, the Memphis Three? The guys were actually all thrown in jail.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it had real consequences for some people who didn't necessarily do provable things, man. Were you ever, I know already that you don't like that word outsider, but back in those days, besides that story of with your dad, where they're like other people your age, people in the community who you had, you know, some sort of disagreement or problem with because of heavy metal?
Back then, almost everybody. I mean, there was like a core group of maybe like five of us that were like cranking out fucking Metallica or Sodom or whatever. You know what I mean? It just wasn't there. I mean, it's almost like, I live in the backwoods, man. Mm-hmm. You know, where I grew up, actually, my backyard was a cemetery, and that's where we'd fucking hang and drink and fucking, you know, commune, you know.
That paints the perfect picture of that Satanic Panic teenage lifestyle right there, man.
Exactly.
That's very interesting, man. All right. So I also. Now, you go back pretty far with Lord Pappas, a.k.a. our buddy Tim, from Record Reserve Record Store here in Huntington, right?
Yeah, fucking Tim.
Yeah, I've known Tim for as long as he's been operating the record store here in Huntington at his different locations. We did have him on a few years ago. It's been a while. We want to get him back. He's probably changed locations twice since then. But you go back with him when he was in his band Smut back in the 80s, right?
I go back before that, man.
We just, for the listeners, as a quick catch-up, Tim was in one of the, a band that I think you could call a pioneering death metal band, even though they might not have had the terminology and the genre, you know, back then, named Smut, and we talked about it. But could you talk a little bit about the Smut days? Were you there to witness all that?
So listen, I mean, back then, Smut, I mean, you call them death metal, whatever you want to call them. They were a fucking thrash band, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were extreme thrash back then. That's what it was to me. I think that's what it was to them, you know, but definitely on the cusp of death. They were fucking brutal, man. But I mean, it's funny because I go back further with they had it. So Smut basically was a cover band called Black Witch before that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they would do like Metallica and Maiden and shit, you know, and which was cool. But once they fucking developed their sound, holy fuck, it was mind-blowing. in this local scene, mind blowing. And Tim's a fucking genius. I don't care what he says.
I love Tim, man. And how about this? From the perspective of somebody who knew Tim at a much younger age in his life, was he a record collector back then? Did you see anything in him now where you look back and go, yeah, it makes sense that he owns a record store and he's a record hoarder?
Not at all.
No, okay.
Not at all. Because, and again, it's so weird. Because as kids and you're growing up and you're listening to metal, you know, it's typical. It's stereotypical. You're like, fucking Slayer put out a new album. It fucking sucks. I fucking hate it. You know what I mean? Destruction. Oh, my God. What the fuck is that third album? Fucking pussies. You know what I mean? So I didn't really see him being a collector as such. You know what I mean? Like, we all worship that Infernal Overkill, you know, by the third album. We're like, what? Come on.
Are you talking about Release from Agony? Was that
Yes, thank you.
I'm going to admit, I bought that from Tim. I bought a reissue of that from Tim at Record Reserve.
Dude, I love that album.
I do too, but I also can understand in the heat of the moment. Yeah, and I mean, I'm 42. When I was a teenager, I had a lot of opinions about a lot of bands. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's part
Very
of it.
Very opinionated, yep.
That's part of it. That's funny, man. All right, so when Smo was around playing shows then, did you tag along? Were you in a band that was playing some of these shows?
All the time, whenever I could. Whenever I could.
There was a show that they were supposed to play with Carnivore, but Carnivore never showed up. I think you talked about that on your social media a little bit, man.
Yep.
What was that like? Was everyone just like waiting and it was like a big letdown or?
Nah, I mean, it was still just a huge party, and we had a great time. It was never like that, you know?
All right, man, fair enough. Tim told me, I don't know if this was you, he said he had a friend who made his own custom 8-tracks for his own personal collection. Was that you?
Ooh, I don't know anything about that.
Okay, somebody making Black Flag 8-tracks out there, allegedly. We'll talk to
That's
Tim.
Crazy.
We'll talk to Tim about it, man. All right, so the 80s was crazy, man. I mean, I love all that stuff because it's kind of like I was too young to be part of it back then, but I remember like older relatives, older cousins kind of, being part of that 80s culture. And I feel like metal was just a little bit more pure back then. You know, we look back at these Bathory and Celtic Frost and Venom records with reverence. Even those of us who maybe weren't there for like the first go around of them. And nowadays, is it weird for you to see heavy metal in this renaissance now where it's a big, wide open field and people are celebrating the old school sound?
I guess. I mean, again, I don't want to sound like an old fucking, you know, bastard, but I don't know, you know?
But like in this day and age, it seems like it's almost like there's so many bands and there's so many people. It's tough. Whereas back in the day, it was like a handful of like you knew who the metal bands were. You knew who to listen to, right? Like there wasn't this the glut of bands wasn't a problem.
Well, no, not at all. But again, it's not necessarily you didn't know who to listen to, mm-hmm. you know, back then. Again, without social media and all that. That's fucking bullshit nowadays. You didn't really know. You kind of had to find it, you know?
Yeah, you had to look for it. So I'm just trying to get to that point of, you know, it's something we talk about a lot on the podcast is like I play that elitist old guy role to myself where I'm like, you know, from the...
Oh, wow!
That, you know, and I'm 42, but it's like back in, you know, there's people now in their young 20s who grew up with YouTube and the internet and everything their whole life. I at least came in on the end of tape trading and, you know, send back my stamps and all that sort of thing. So so I can flex on everybody.
Listen, I don't consider myself elitist old guy. I mean, I like what I like. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what it is? It's like you said before when I talked about the partying in the 80s. It's not romanticizing. It's not elitist. It's just how it was. It was a little bit harder in the 90s. It was a little more clandestine. Right. And there was something more valuable to it, I think, because of that. It's still there. You can still get it, but it's how you approach it, you know? Like, now, I mean, maybe transitioning now, something I wanted to talk to you about is, like, you do your projects pretty much by yourself. It seems like you have this encapsulated world that you work out of. Would you agree with that? And does that maybe come from living in an area where you live, where it's a little bit more rural?
I definitely do. It's just me. There's nothing else involved. There's nothing else involved. I don't have to look at an outside world to see something else. I'm not going to fucking listen to Spirit Box and go, I need to incorporate this fucking Spirit Box shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Fair enough, man. I mean, that's what I'm saying, too, is like you're kind of, it seems like you're out there kind of doing your own thing in your own little world with these projects, and there's maybe a little bit more.
That's it.
Well, I'm not, respectfully, there's a bit of a purity to your sound and to your concept for that reason. You know what I mean? You're not like part of the horde. There's like an old school mentality at work there. Was there ever a period now, because we talked a little bit about some of your old school work. I think we left off when you were hanging out with Smut in the 80s.
Right.
But was there a period where you weren't creating, weren't playing music in your life, and these projects now were like a resurgence, or like how, you know, like walk me up till modern times from the back in the day stuff.
All right. So definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, so after that, it all kind of ended. Smut ended, right? So Smut ended, and actually, so what was it? Maybe 86, 87, when Smut ended. And I ended up getting a job at the same place where Tim was working, right? And he handed me a fucking demo of Rockin' Joe, his new project. And I don't... No one knows about this probably, but it was phenomenal. Just crazy proto-thrash outsider weirdness, man. And I'm like, I got to fucking work with this guy. But unfortunately, I ended up moving to Jersey, and I did my own thing. And yeah, I mean, music dropped off for me. I didn't want it to, but it did. Life happened, you know? So, but my interest in music was growing. So I started getting into weird shit. I started getting into like Alien Sex Fiend and fucking Dinosaur before they were Dinosaur Jr. and Scratch Acid. Like there was weird shit happening and I was into it. I thought it was cool, but I wasn't playing. There was nothing happening. There was no one to hook up with. Yet again, you think Jersey, oh, big scene. That's kind of why I moved there. Nothing was happening, you know? So yeah, I didn't play for quite a long time. So yeah, I guess it's a resurgence for me. But it, again, this started in like, you know, 2000, early 2000, where I started again with Warhorde.
Yeah, with Warhorde, there's maybe a little bit more material for people to go back and check out.
Yeah, it's fucking horrible. What do you want me to tell you?
I was able to listen to Kiss the Goat and Death Rattle. Those are two of your albums.
Okay, so... I mean, for me personally, Kiss the Goat is probably the best thing I did with that project. I mean, Death Rattle's good, man. Death Rattle had a lot of good riffs. The problem was, again, I was trying to fucking explore it all on my own. And I just didn't have the drumming capabilities. You know? So I was trying to use a drum machine. There's good riffs on there. But the drum machine didn't cut it. So if you're a drummer out there, get in touch.
Do you pick up drums? I thought I saw a picture of like an electronic drum kit or something.
That's what I do now. I play my own drums now. Yep. Since Lord Alfred, I do my own drums.
Okay. Got it, man. And Lord, just for the listeners, as we go along, cause you know, it's a music podcast, Warhorde, what you might be expecting if you've been listening to this conversation thus far. I think it definitely speaks to the influence of very raw 80s heavy metal, like Old Destruction and Old Bathory. Yep. And those type of bands. There's definitely something to be said for that. As we move along, Lord Alfred is definitely a little different. I think it has some of that spirit from what we were just talking about, but it's like a lot more rock and roll. That's a little bit maybe of like the Chuck Berry and the Animals coming out of your soul.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Absolutely, man. I wanted to find a way to incorporate that because that's what I was raised on, you know? Mm-hmm. Like Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, and the Animals. Like that was the shit to me as like, again, as a 5 or 6 year old, you know what I mean? And that just started coming out. And again, I mean, as you think about it, as I was thinking about it and starting to play that stuff, Motorhead came into play a lot with that because it's fucking Motorhead. They're influenced by the 50s. You know, so some of that came out, but I wanted it to have a sort of, it's not that I wanted it to, but it naturally came out as a sort of Motorhead Bathory meets Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley. I mean, that was important to me.
Yeah, I think Lemmy himself even used to say that we're a rock and roll band, not a heavy metal. Like, you know, they just play rock and roll in reference to Motorhead, you know.
And that's you know, that's the basic fact. Yeah. I mean, fuck, Iron Fist is brutally thrashy, yeah, and it's my favorite album from them. And I wanted to get that in there somehow, you know.
Yeah. So, with Lord Alfred and Warhorde, what is the inception of a new project now, Casket Wretch? What did you need a new vehicle for that you felt like you couldn't get out in those two?
All right. So the whole thing happened because, so with Warhorde, I mean, again, I talk about Barbarian Wrath, you know. I mean, such a great underground label. And unfortunately, Black Goat, the owner, you know, he passed away. And me and BG, even though I only met him once, he actually flew over and we saw Toxic Holocaust together. You know, we would talk every day religiously on IM. We would just talk and talk and bullshit about metal. I felt very close to him. And when he passed away, I said, fuck, I will never do Warhorde again. Because the guy fucking heard my demo, which was only 7 minutes of Warhorde. I mean, five songs, a minute each. And he was like, you're fucking done. You're signed. I'm taking you on my label. And I was blown away, you know. So when he passed away, you know, I did what? Three albums with him, three full lengths. And when he passed away, I said, I'm done. I will never fucking call it Warhorde again. He was actually Warhorde because he put it out. He pushed me. He kept fucking saying, do it, do it. And when he went and passed, I just couldn't do it. There was no way I was going to use that fucking Warhorde again. So I created Lord Alfred because I was already experimenting with the rock and roll side. And I always said to BG, Black Goat, I said, I'm doing a rock and roll album, dude. And he would always laugh. So, and Lord Alfred came into fruition after that. It had to.
Yeah. That label was in operation since 1994, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm familiar.
Was there. It was before that.
The band Bloodstorm. The black metal band, they actually used to play out live and hit Long Island a few times when I was a teenager. They made a big impact on me. A really good, really good underrated band. They put out some
absolutely,
Wow, that's deep, man. I respect it. You know, I respect that kind of connection there. That speaks to the underground, you know, and the loyalty and the camaraderie that we get sometimes through this thing.
And I mean, that's what it's about.
In a similar way, then, so you do Lord Alfred. Is Casket Wretch maybe a way to because you put out the split with Lord Pappas. Is it a way to reconnect with Tim in some way, or is it, you know, is it symbolic of that?
All right, so I do the Lord Alfred, right, and I hook up with another label, Super Sargasso. Great label, man. Great at first. Just tremendous, totally supportive. He wanted another. All right. The guy wanted another Warhorde album. I told him, I'm not fucking doing it. I'm just not doing it, dude. Take my fucking new project and run with it, or just don't, you know? And he picked it up and he was phenomenal. And he released the first album of Lord Alfred, first full length. And then unfortunately, the guy kind of flaked. He just, I don't know, went a little weird. Just started not communicating and just wouldn't have anything to do with it. And he did it to every artist on the album, on the label. And so that was it. So I went independent again and I found another label, Cult of Oblivion, which is a great whatever. They do a lot of dungeon synth and like crazy stuff. But for whatever reason, the guy was willing to release it, another Lord Alfred. So I did the EP with him, and it's a great EP. I mean, it's probably one of my favorites. And that was that. So.
And then the motivation to do Casket Wretch.
And that's what I'm saying, because you're label after label after label, right? So now I'm on to something. So now I got sort of my own. I've always had my own thing, but now I'm sort of hitting it. So now I'm sort of this fucking, and again, I hate this term, but it is a sort of black and roll. It's an outsider thing. So now I'm hitting on it, right? Every label is gone. They're all whatever, you know? So I said, fuck it. It's just time to do this. I have to do this. So it was a culmination of Warhorde, Lord Alfred turned into Casket Wretch, because that's what the riffs were becoming. Mm-hmm. And it was starting to gel. So I had to, you know, I felt it was important. Just totally start anew.
Hearing you tell the story the way you just have makes a lot of sense now, having heard the projects. And it's not just like you have three different bands going at all times. It's more.
No, and that's not the point. Nope.
It's a journey. I can see that, you know.
Exactly.
I get that. So earlier, well, I guess I should say later last year, you and Tim teamed up. Tim has a project, Lord Pappas. We're going to talk to him and get him on the podcast as well very soon. You guys put out a split tape. Also a split 7-inch of that release. I got got myself a poster. I mean, you guys went all out. this is independently released between you guys, no?
Yes, absolutely. DIY, baby.
Tell me about that, man, because that's a route that none of my bands have gone in a while, in a few years. How was it getting things pressed up? I mean, Tim is kind of he doesn't manufacture records, but he runs a record store. Maybe he had a little bit of inside knowledge there. I don't know.
No, not at all. I had no fucking idea. Jesus. I had to coach him through the whole thing.
All right, fair enough, man.
So listen, so what happened was, I mean, I hate social media. I fucking hate it. Mm-hmm. I hate it. But I decided I guess I should do something. I'm at the fucking age of making music, whether you fucking like it or not. So let me do a little Instagram. That was my, ooh, let me get on Instagram. Let me get some likes, you know, and whatever. So I put it on there. And I started seeing like Record Reserve, right? And I'm looking for smut shit, right? Because I'm like, ah, fuck, let me check out if fucking anyone's around, you know? Fucking Chance, the bass player, and fucking Rich, you know, the drummer. Let me check out everybody. And Tim was on there as Record Reserve. And I fucking looked him up and I said, dude, I got this thing going on. You want to add some solos? You want to add some vocals? Whatever you want to do, man. I said to you a long time ago, I want to work with you. Let's fucking make it happen, you know? And luckily, he was like, I'll fucking do solos any day. And he fucking shreds on the shit, you know? So it was really cool. So I said to him, dude, let's do a fucking split. A split 7-inch. I mean, not many bands are doing that anymore. You know, that's like, whatever. That's another 80s thing. Oh, my God. You know, but whatever. It's a cool idea, you know, and that's how it happened.
Yeah, and we've been seeing it a lot. Speaking of social media, we've been seeing Tim pushing it and a lot of people supporting it on the Record Reserve IG there. I was lucky enough to I traded a copy for. I did the old school way, and I traded him one of my band's releases for it. And enjoyed it. We urge the listeners to go check out, not just Casket Wretch and Lord Pappas, because that's the most recent, but all this music we've been talking about, but definitely the Casket Wretch. That leads me to this then. Is there any signs of stopping? Is there a new release planned? What do you got planned for the future?
Yes, absolutely. I'm talking to Tim. We're going to keep it going, man. We're going to do another split. Like I said, so I got another project from Tim coming out. On my own label, Screaming Alice. That's my new thing. So I have an old demo of his, Post Smut, which is phenomenal. I don't care what anybody says. Outsider shit. Yep. Ooh, 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 ooh. So I'm going to release that. And then we're hitting it, man. We're going to go for another split because I love working with Tim. Tim is, I'm telling you, man, the guy's a genius. He needs to be fucking heard. Lyrically, musically, the guy's a fucking genius. He's hysterical, man. Just a genius.
We should all have a friend who's as supportive as you are of Tim right now, man. I love hearing it, though, man, because I do like Tim. I stop by the record store when I can, and like I said, we've had him on the show. I've always been kind of compelled by the story of Smut and that he...
Yep.
We have this guy running a record store right in my town that was kind of like a seminal... I mean, I know thrash, death metal wasn't a thing when he was doing it. He was pushing...
See, now you caught on. It wasn't called death metal.
He was pushing thrash metal, you know, into what it would be.
Exactly. Yep.
Back then, man. That's great to hear, man. So let's talk... you know, we do like to get into gear. I'm not a guitarist myself. A lot of the listeners are, and we have producers and audio engineers. I've seen on your IG... that you mess around, you switch out pickups, you like the gear, you like the pedals, you like all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm big into it. Yeah.
Let's just talk. I mean, just for a point of reference, like, what's some stuff you've been into lately? What are you having fun tinkering with lately?
So, I mean, basically, I never change my amps. I mean, obviously, I'm recording at home. I don't need a fucking half stack. I don't need a full stack. Okay. So I always go through Orange 30s. Orange 30s are the fucking shit. I don't care what anybody says. I'm not a Marshall guy. Too fucking trebly, too fucking nasally. I don't do it. I love my Orange. I get my grit. You know what I mean? So lately, man, I don't want to give away my secret sauce.
That's a line we tread with this question. Yeah, don't. Yeah.
All right, I'll tell you what it is. A $40 TC Electronics Fangs distortion. Okay. That's what I've recorded every Lord Alfred and Casket Wretch with. Right now, I'm fucking around with a vintage made in Japan Boss HM2, the famous Swedish sound.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little too gnarly. I find if I dial it back, you get a nice sound, but I'm not into nice sound.
I saw something on your IG about that one. Isn't it like a very older pedal that was manufactured in Japan? It's not one of the newer ones that they're coming out with?
No, it's strictly vintage, man. It's an actual made in Japan. First run. It's a really fucking sweet pedal.
You had it from back in the day or you just acquired it from...
No, I just acquired it. I was at some fucking store and it was like $60 and I was like, dude, I'm taking it.
That's nice because the HM2 has become its own subgenre now amongst the explosion of younger metal bands, you know. So that's a thing now, man. That's cool, dude. And what about like guitars? I mean, are you the type of guy that has a collection of guitars or you just have like a few trusty ones or?
Dude, I can't even play and I have a fucking collection. I'm just a fucking nut job. I got fucking Gibson Les Pauls. I got fucking BC Riches. I got Strats. I just buy shit.
Hmm.
But for most of my recording, it's definitely a Les Paul or a BC Rich, no doubt. Thick sound.
Fair enough. And I saw something on you about on your IG about you switching out the pickups.
Oh, I always do. DiMarzio Super Distortion, the way to go.
Now, just for me, man, I'm going to play dummy right here. You know, I'm not a guitarist. What is the, what's the significance of why would you do that? And what do you get better out of the ones you put in there?
I think the DiMarzio has a little more thump, a little more bass response, but it has an even mid. It just provides more thump, mm-hmm. even though I crank treble on everything. So you wouldn't even know. So it wouldn't matter. But that's
enough,
the deal.
Fair enough. I'm just always interested in the tinkering and the kind of customization that people do.
I think the DiMarzio Super Distortion will always win through any pickup. Give me a $2,000 pickup and an $89 DiMarzio. Take the fucking DiMarzio and put it in any guitar.
Fair enough, man. Any any ambition to get a live band going? Is it lack of finding a drummer, or is it just you're not into packing up the gear and going out to the club and all that?
It's always an ambition. Mm-hmm. I've been trying, dude, for almost 30 years now to try to get people on board. And it's the same shit. Oh, yeah, dude, yeah. Oh, fucking yeah, let's do it. Let's meet up. And no one ever does. I'm in the backwoods. You know what I mean? It's fucking hillbillies. Everyone who says they're going to do something never does. Fuck yeah, I want to do it. I want to go on stage for like 10, 15 minutes, blow people away and fucking walk off. You know what I mean? The people aren't there.
Yeah.
Like, I'll put ads out all the time and everything I can. It's like, oh, you like Motorhead? Yeah, but I really like Jimi Hendrix. And that's fucking great. I fucking love Jimi Hendrix. But I'm not playing Jimi Hendrix, dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Tough, man. What about in your area, at least since you were a kid, what about the availability of like venues and bands coming through? Do you get to, are there many shows anywhere?
Nah, there's nothing.
Nothing, huh?
There's nothing. You're going to play a pizza place. You're going to play a lonesome bar. You know what I mean? You're not doing much. I mean, and it was great. The bars are great. You know, you get to kick ass and just fucking fuck everyone up and leave, but there's no venues. Everything's gone. We used to have the big ones was the Chance Theater, you know, in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah.
And that was great. You know, they had great bands all the time, but that's gone. There's no venues. There's nothing.
Do you ever travel? Do you ever make the trip out to where whatever the closest place would be? Do you ever go to shows much or at all?
Nowadays, not so much. But, I mean, I used to go to Albany, Valentine's. We catch shows, you know what I mean?
Valentine's.
Philly, we caught, you know, shows there, but... You know what? I don't know. I love seeing live bands. But again, maybe it's part of the old school me. I like small venues. I like seeing bands in a very small place. I don't care if the sound is shit. I like seeing them in a very small club where you can react with people. I don't want to see stadiums. I don't want to see, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean exactly. Trust me. Sometimes you see, like many years ago, I saw Meshuggah as the opening act supporting, Corrosion of Conformity, Typo Neg, bigger bands. But Meshuggah in that context, they were much better in a rock club, a metal club than in some big arena. You know, it was kind of weird. I understand.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing.
I know exactly what you mean, man. I hear you. So, all right. So, I want to say, you know, I wish you guys the best of luck going forward. We're looking forward to another release. I'm gonna get Tim on here, and we're gonna fact check you guys back and forth about whatever you guys said about each other.
Go ahead, man.
With that being said, every interview I kind of close out with the same question. I'll give you the opportunity to plug and promote anything else you got going on afterwards. But as we wind down, could you recommend one older and one newer piece of music for the listeners? It could be anything, you metal or otherwise, demo, album, whatever, something from back in the day and something just a little bit more recent. No strict rules.
Some older from back in the day that I really admire, that a lot of people probably don't even listen to. It's a weird one. Manila Road Invasion.
Manila Road Invasion.
Classic. Fucking brilliant. Newer. Ooh.
That's the tough one for some people.
Newer. Wow. I mean, what's new? I got to tell you the truth. And this may sound weird. And I can't even pronounce your fucking name. There's this band that I've been listening to. I mean, I don't have their album or anything, but dude, it's pretty killer. This fucking, and I know you're going to get this fucking Sangrisa Baga Booga Baga Boo Doo Doo. I don't even know what they are, but it's pretty fucking cool, man.
Sanguisuga Bog.
Yeah, whatever the fuck they are. It's pretty cool.
I had to learn it because we had their drummer and their singer. separate episode a few years ago, and we're trying to get one of them back on when it works out, man. Yeah. So I had to sit there and like write it 10 times in a row and learn how to pronounce it. Yeah. Good guys.
I kind of dug it. It's good.
Yeah, good. Yeah, great guys. Really dedicated to the music and the scene, and they're working hard out there. I mean, there's some people that are angry because they're blowing up and whatever. But it's like but
you know what? I can hear the honesty in their shit, man. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
No, those guys love the music and they're working their ass off out there.
Yeah. Tell them I said hi, man.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll do, man. Yeah, good guys. That's funny, man. Yeah, the singer is like one of those. One of those guys that you know, he knows every death metal demo and could, you know, rattle off all the bands and all that sort of thing.
Right, right.
Like I try to present myself as. All right, man.
I mean, if we were talking death metal for an old recommendation, I'd say everyone should listen to Morpheus Descend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We talk about them a lot.
Infinity is probably one of the greatest albums ever.
Yeah, Ritual of Infinity. We were just talking about that. We talk a lot about upstate New York death metal of the 80s and 90s because it gets a little, you know, overshadowed. We're from the backyard of like Suffocation and Pyrexia, so
right, exactly. Yeah,
you know, the Morpheus Descends of the world get a little bit overshadowed sometimes, man. Yeah, great band, Morpheus Descends. Chronicles of the Shadow One's a great EP.
That was a good one too.
Yeah, dude.
Fuck yeah, man. Awesome. Good stuff. Killer.
Awesome. So, PH, I thank you so much for your time. I know, like you said, you hate social media. We appreciate you coming out and doing this, shedding a little light on things here. And like I said, you know, at first I say, all right, you know, I'm in three or four bands. People have projects. Maybe this guy just has three projects. No,
nah, it's not like that, man.
And I like the story. I really, I like how you honored, Barbarian Wrath Records and the legacy there.
You,
and, you know, it, I do like appreciate the sentiment there and the kind of story behind it there.
That means a lot to me, man.
Yeah, dude. Anyone who's been into this type of underground music for a significant amount of time, we've all lost friends. We've all lost, you know, seen people. And it's something that makes this more than just music to people. It's a community, you know? Right. So that's like an example of it. And that being said, I'm sorry, go ahead.
This is my fucking life, man. This is my heart, you know. It doesn't matter, you know. You can tell me whatever. Drums suck, vocals suck, guitar sucks, bass sucks. It doesn't matter. I'm going to keep doing it. So fuck you, you know.
Yeah, resilience.
That's what it's about. For every band, it should be.
And with that, I was going to ask you any final statement for the listeners. I think
that was it.
you can't really beat what you just said, man. but I will ask you parting words for listeners of your music and listeners of our podcast.
Just keep it heavy, man. Keep doing what you do. Don't fucking let people influence you.
100%, man. PH of Casket Wretch, Lord Alfred, and Warhorde. You can look for Lord Alfred's Rotten Roll on – it's Rotten Roll, right?
Yep, you got it.
Lord Alfred's Rot and Roll on IG to keep up with this stuff. And thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate you.
Nah, thank you, man.
Almost went off the rails there, Terrell. Sorry.
Oh, man. Dude, you got me thinking.
I'll send it to you in a minute.
I think I know what you're talking about.
I'll send it to you in a minute, man. We're not going to record that.
Okay.
Let's just, this is the segue. We're going to leave that in where I said that, man.
No, I'm in trouble.
Oh, no. Wah. No, listen, man. There's a lot of people in the New York death metal scene, man, and I love all of them on varying, and I live in varying degrees, man. There's that love that, you know, and then there's the big love, man. Most people got the big love. I love everybody. Terrell, how you doing over there? You still with me?
I'm here. Chilling.
Yeah, man. I'm chilling back too. And speaking of chilling, speaking of love, a band kind of came out of, well, slapped me out of left field. I don't know. I'm not going to say they came out of nowhere. There's people that are more on the beat than me with this stuff. But I did see, first, I saw one band that I kind of felt came out of nowhere. Is it Final Resting Place?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up with this. Yep.
Yeah, well, this is kind of like, because they're playing their first show. By the time people listen to this, it may have happened. No, I don't think it will happen. Right? Regardless, but they're playing their first. They've played their first show in Philly, I saw, but they're playing their first New York show coming up, and it's going to be part of a tour of another band called Torture.
Yeah.
Sorry to blow your spot, but I wanted to give this. And I said to another friend of mine, sorry, I talk music with other friends, not just you.
Oh.
Yeah, don't take it personally. I talk music with everybody. But I was talking about, and he was like, yeah, I don't know. Neither of us ever heard of this band Torture, but they're kind of like top billed on the flyer. You know, all due respect. That's cool.
Yep, yep.
But I was like, you know, where did this, you know, it's the younger kids. I'm feeling old now. I'm out of touch. What's going on? You, being younger than me, brought it to my attention. Let's talk about it a little bit. I want to let you take over now.
Oh, man. Should we just start with that show lineup?
That show lineup is... Yeah. What's the date? Do you have it in front of you?
All right. Oh, whoa. You call me slipping. Yeah, wow. Why would I even bring it up and well, not even ready?
It's with... Wait,
of course I have it. Dude, it's right here. All right. We got a Boys in Hospital Bomber.
Yeah, yeah.
Stabbed Without Remorse. So we got Long Island representing, of course. And then, like you mentioned, Final Resting Place and Torture playing at the Kingsland Monday, May 13th.
Okay, so this episode will be out in time for people to...
It should be, yeah.
To catch them, be knowledgeable.
I think I'll actually bring a hard hat for that one. Like, I have two. So if anybody else needs, I got you. Stay strapped.
Yeah, I'm hiring bodyguards now. That's my new thing. Budget body. They're just big fat old guys. Like they're not retired cops with guns or nothing. I'm just hiring guys. It's just gonna look like I'm in a crew of fat guys, but like two of them are ready to take a bullet for me. You know what I mean?
Oh man.
Oh god. Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea. You're gonna need the padding at that show, man. That's gonna be a reckless show.
Yeah, it's gonna be insane, dude.
They should have an ambulance. They should have a bus outside.
Now, I've been telling people you're gonna have to sign like a waiver.
Yeah,
before going.
Yeah.
To that one.
They're gonna have it's gonna be like WWE style. They're gonna have people going like in the back room and like frying people up on the kitchen oven, you know, on the pizza oven they got back there or whatever. The little brick oven pizzas or whatever. They're gonna have people shoving other people in there and stuff. Especially with Stabbed playing, man, that is a reckless lineup.
Yeah.
Whoever put that together,
it's gonna be wild, dude.
But yeah, so this band Torture, they kind of just popped into my perspective from nowhere. Tell me a little bit about what you know about them.
Yeah, so they kind of hit me up upside the head. I think I saw them a couple years ago, and I noticed they were doing like releases every fall, and. In the past, he had more of a slam, gore noisy kind of project. You know, think Effluence and Incentithrack, you know, definitely out there, brutal death metal. So it's like already kind of clicking with me, but didn't 100% grab me. And then I ran into the latest album, this album number 4, and it's called Enduring Freedom. And that has just been one of my favorite records in a while because it's just so ridiculous. And in a way that I love my slam, it's self-aware. I think it's a little more to the surface, like on the surface, it's so ridiculous, especially with the vocals, like pure sewer guttural vocals, unintelligible and like polarizing. Like I could see people like coming into this thinking they're going to like it and then being off put by the vocals, but that I love the vocals because of the approach. And the drums are so like tasteful, and there's just a lot going on. Like as I'm hearing these slams, I can kind of tell where this guy is coming from musically. I could tell the slammy side, like the Defeated Sanities, the Devourment, Cephalotripsy. Like you even have songs that are just straight up like tributes to Cephalotripsy and riffing, but with a little more I guess. Solid, I don't know, substance behind it. And kind of the record ends out with a little more like artsy kind of guitar pieces and almost like orchestral vocal pieces kind of to tie it all out. And it's almost jarring compared to the rest of the slams. But dude, it's so ignorant. Like, I don't know. I know I'm kind of gushing about it, but like I feel like such a nerd listening to this one. Like even Gerald hit me up about it. Our boy, you know, Boy Gerald from Scotland. Hope I got that right. Former guest of the show.
Yeah.
He even hit me up. He was like, dude, I don't know if I should like this or hate this. And I'm like, yes, that's how you should feel upon first listen. But yeah, I think he kind of got it. It's yeah, I don't know, man. What'd you think?
I didn't get it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
There's a lot to process here, but not a lot to process here in an interesting way. I was not off-put by the vocals. I want to get that out of the way first of all. The vocals, okay. I enjoy the vocals. I enjoy the, I enjoy everything about the vocals, everything about the snare tone and the kind of choice placement of snare in the beat and the little snare Love rolls. It. Enjoy everything about the guitar tone and the type of slams going on.
Yes.
Somewhere around song four, the fourth track, I looked at the running time. I think it's six minutes and change.
Yeah.
And I said, is there going to be some sort of like Opeth like excursion? Is there going to be like some, a sample or something? Like, what's going to happen in the next 4.5 minutes? And it was, yeah, I mean, it was just more of that.
Exactly.
I feel old. I feel like 4 or 5 years ago, maybe not that, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I started, the pandemic blurs it, I started feeling like slam breakdown types, like when beatdown became a thing, if this makes sense. When I started hearing the term beatdown as a subgenre, and I just didn't get the difference between that and other types of hardcore and deathcore and whatever, that's kind of when I like felt old enough to kind of tune out and just, what, you know, it's old music to me, man, you know, just like not Spirit of 99. But like, this makes me feel like it's almost like Repudiation, but like they're taking it to this point where it's like a jam band or like a con. It's just like he's rolling it out. I don't, oh God, man, there's a lot.
Yeah, you're describing it well.
Yeah, I'm not a guitarist. You know, maybe there's something here that I'm really not seeing here. I see this as being something that could be great kind of background music for people skateboarding or working on some sort of project, something where you would have your background music playing, you know, while you're working. I'm out in the garden, maybe. I don't know. I could see it being a lot more effective live. But to have like a 6-minute song of just constant grooving, breakdowning, guttural, pinging slam, it was a little bit jarring to my senses, and I'm not putting this down. I understand this band has a substantial following and expectation around it. I just think that maybe I'm like conditioned to a different type of slammy death metal. I don't like, maybe it's my age showing or my, what, I don't know what it is. Like there's, it's like on paper, I should like this, but It almost tested me and proved I'm not as much of a slamaholic as I like led on to be. You know, I don't know, man. It's something that band, I'm gonna be discussing Final Resting Place with Dave Gladding on an upcoming episode and one of the recommendations. We usually don't like leak the spoiler alert the recommendations, but that's why I'm not really bringing it up.
I didn't do that one either because I saw you had the CD. I was like, okay.
Well, cause, yeah, really Dave has traditionally been like the internal bleeding pyrexia guy on the podcast, so I want to give it to him. But we could talk about it too because, well, I'm going to bring it up now, so I'm going to get your take on it either way. I really like that Final Resting Place album, CD, EP album, whatever you want to call it. I'm anticipating seeing them live and seeing what they do. But I'm going to say this too. They do something, I kind of see two parallels there almost in a way. It's like Torture takes what Repudiation maybe used to do a little bit and uses the breakdowns and the groove and just hones in on that as their style. They don't do a whole lot of the death metal that was placed around the breakdowns and slams. They hone in on the guttural vocals and the grooves. A Final Resting Place seems to do something similar with like Pyrexia and especially Dehumanized style.
Yeah.
They take a lot of the breakdowns and the stuff that really is effective live, and they don't do as much of the death metal and the blasting. I'm not saying they don't do any of it or they're not capable of it. It's a stylistic choice. So I'm kind of seeing like with the younger generation that's crossing over from the hardcore and deathcore scenes that they're like making this, the New York style of death metal loans itself a little bit more to that. You know, that's what, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I totally agree. I've been following that Final Resting Place and they nailed that sound. I got the same vibes like Internal Bleeding, System of the Animal, Hatred, Anger, Disgust, Era, Pyrexia, Scattered Remnants and Torturement, stuff like that. And yeah, it's pretty good. And I think some of those guys are from the band Sanction, which I was a fan of as well. And that was another like homage to older to them hardcore, you know, late 90s, early 2000s hardcore. Yeah, that's awesome. They're awesome. And then I think, you know, you really described Torture well, especially that seven minute song. When that first hit me, I was like, okay, where are we going with this? And it was one of those things I kind of had to listen to and feel out. And I do agree, it's good background music. It's fun to work to and mess around with. I think the statement is like, now I'm going to sound like a doof, but like, I feel like the statement is the limitation in the range of the vocals, the limitation in not doing anything but a slam, keeping it within like a certain area of the fretboard. It's like, okay, how can we do this without doing the exact same thing? But that's why I said like surface level, it's like, what are you doing? It's just slam after slam after slam. But then when you start hearing the songs, you're like, oh, wow, that's an interesting compositional trick. Oh, he brought something, a theme and variation from the first part, and then he brought it back. He did like a classical move in a slam concept, which is like, you know, weird to even think about. I think there's a song where like the ending of the song is the beginning of the next song. So like kind of little theme and variation tricks and just like little classical composer tricks, which he happens to cite too as some of his the influences. So it's like this weird, I feel like you get this weird bell curve effect where you have people that are like true slamaholics that don't care. Like when I think about this show and like, if you're just thinking like Torture, all I hear is slams, that's one end of it. And then the other end is like, you're nerding out and you're like, oh shit, this is some weird lowbrow high art kind of thing. I may be gassing it up way too much, but it's just like something I could tell, like it's slammy and there's just like some extra thought in it, but it's like hidden. It's ridiculous.
The idea that there might be something highbrow and intellectual hidden in this would completely explain why I had a little bit of an aversion to it. I think that's what we're gonna. That's a theory I'm gonna go with here, man. I could sniff out the degree.
Yes,
I could sniff out.
Oh,
this isn't for uneducated peasants like myself, guys.
Dude, don't downplay yourself, man. You're dude. I guarantee you read way more than me. I don't read. I don't know if I can.
I read Dungeons and Dragons monstrous manuals at night to my dog.
It's way more.
Yeah.
I can't play that game because there's words and things.
I'm just joking. I just for the listeners, I have a running joke and on social media too about college degrees and the fact that I'm not a quote unquote well educated man, like I always say on the podcast. It's
allegedly.
It's a dig at one person who went to college for 10 years and tries to talk down to me and act like I'm stupid. That's all it is. It's all about one fucking person, man, one asshole. Who I used to be in a band with. But enough about that. Listen, we've kind of gone off the rails with this one. I'm going to ask.
Are you right?
All right. So, again, I don't want to. I'm not disrespecting Torture. I understand that this is a band that has garnered a following and a lot of hype around it. Terrell, you kind of made me feel like I missed something and I got to go back and listen to this.
No, you didn't, man. You get it. You sorry, but like you pointed out some of the things I wanted to mention. Snare tone, guitar tone, vocals. That's what I like fell in love with.
Yeah.
Just like aesthetically off the bat.
I wouldn't even. And the more I heard you talk about it with the themes and some of the stuff they're doing, it sounds almost like it's something that needs to be listened to the way you would listen to a hip hop mixtape or electronic music. More than the way you would listen to a metal song where you're expecting momentum and change and that give and take effect.
For sure.
You know, like you're
this
not
is so static.
I'm not joking around. I honestly feel like I'm getting a little bit of a perspective shift here because I went into this expecting something in the realm of hardcore, death metal, grindcore, where you're expecting, you know, even if it's all breakdowns, like certain hardcore and beatdown bands, there are certain types of momentum changes and tempo changes. Whereas this, it's almost like you're supposed to kind of lock into the groove. I'm almost picturing like when you listen to like, you know, electronic music and beats or something, you know, like that's maybe that's more the intention. And then you kind of. Like the subtle changes, almost the way like they change the bass lines and some of that type of stuff. You know, that's what's supposed to be effective. I'm not saying I don't like Torture. I think I just need to maybe like give them another shot and just listen to it from a few different angles. So I'll leave it at that. And then definitely, you know, we got this far into the conversation. Thought provoking subject matter. I'll say that a little bit more depth than we tend to get nowadays. I mean, that's a big generalization too, but you know, I will just say it kind of slapped me in the face and hit me out of left field. Some of the subject matter that this band was dealing with in terms of reality and the kind of brutal realities of war and policy specific to our country. And things that happened during our lifetime. So I'm going to leave it there. It's a very stark, brutal aesthetic that this band has. I don't know if you want to add anything there.
Yeah, I agree, Will. That's actually the first time I ran into Torture. It was the previous release. And then I saw all the track titles and I said, what is the context between... Just Google each title. And it's like, wow. Just go down the list. And it's, once again, they're not messages. They're just the words of things that happened.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I'm going to leave it at that. This is, I think it's fair to say at this point in the conversation, this is something the listeners really need to hear and judge for themselves.
This is Torture, Enduring Freedom.
Back. And you know what? I'm going to, just because we talked about it, man, we might as well. I like the band. I'm going to ask Tom to bring in a little bit of that final resting place, just because we were discussing that in the same context of the conversation. So, Tom, if you could, just a little bit of that final resting place EP as well.
We'll be right back.
now that we played some new stuff going on in the realm of like guttural, brutal, slamming music that has a little bit of crossover element between the hardcore and the death metal scene, I wanted to bring something to the table that I thought would pair nicely with that from a little bit back in the day. Something that is researchable with our own podcast. If you want to go back many episodes, probably over a year now, I lose track of time. Dan Gates, also a Fully Consumed, was in the building, was on the phone with us one time. We did a full interview with him, which had a considerable amount of time focusing on his old band, Ton, just like the weight measurement, T-O-N. Ton was a band around in the early 90s from like 1994. I believe they just broke up a few years ago. They had a 2020 full length. They were from Canton, Ohio. They had four demos, two of which were reissued in the Blind Follower / Point of View compilation in 1998. I want to talk about that one. Then they had three full lengths after that, all of which are recommended. This is a band that kind of stayed on their full lengths after these demos that I'm going to talk about, their full lengths. They stayed fairly true to what they did. I would say, I think they got a little bit more death metal oriented rather than hardcore in terms of the vocal delivery on their later material, but they definitely stayed true to the sound. But on these demos, in the Blind Follower and Point of View demos in particular that I collected on this compilation I'm talking about, they were doing a style of death metal, definitely death metal. I would say maybe akin to bands like Dying Fetus and Internal Bleeding. Mind you, this is from 95 and 97, respectively. But with a little bit more of a hardcore inflection, because the vocals, all four band members are credited with vocals. So there's a few different styles going on, some of which are very pronounced and hardcore, but also the lyrics.
Yeah.
I have the CD and I was looking through the lyrics before. The lyrics touch on the spread of wealth in the United States, racism, how we treat our veterans. There's a lot going on in their lyrics that at the time wasn't necessarily your typical death metal lyrics. And that's kind of also what maybe popped into my head, that maybe there was a parallel there with you know, we were talking about the band Torture before. A ton not as overt. And not as specific, maybe, with that kind of political and kind of social commentary on war and political policy. But it's there in the lyrics for sure. And it was a little bit more blatant than you typically got. I remember them sticking out for that back in the day. I mean, the covers of their albums had the Red, White, and Blue and Uncle Sam. And they were, you know, they were kind of suggestive of that. You know, just the names Blind Follower, Point of View. So this band was, they weren't doing the blood and guts thing. They weren't doing the demonic thing back in 95 and 97. And they were having the hardcore vocals over the breakdowns. They were a little ahead of the curve with that sort of thing. And besides that, just musically alone, if you don't care about any of that at all, if you just want to hear a death metal band with a sick bass player, this is, you know, worth the price of entry alone. Yeah, the bass player is right up front doing a lot of cool stuff, not always just following along with the riff. This is a band, one thing I'll say is that maybe more so than you get sometimes with Internal Bleeding or with Dying Fetus, there's a little bit of, Terrell, maybe you could speak to this, because there's like some guitar harmonies and some, they bring a little quality of doom into it sometimes. There's something that kind of like, there's a depth to the guitar work on there, where the guitars are not necessarily shredding or doing like lead guitars over a rhythm guitar, but they're working together a lot to kind of like effectively inject kind of doomy, kind of melancholy harmonies into this slamming hardcore death metal. There's something very, and with the bass player, something very effective about the overall package. I want to maybe hand it over to you now and get your opinion.
Man, you nailed it, man. All right, next band. Now you pretty much got it all, man. This one I agree with the hardcore sentiment too of this band, everything with the vocals and the themes. This album in particular, I would say, is very political in the cover, because you got like Uncle Sam and the wage slaves. Wage slaves for real. And then, you know, the lyrics with, you know, the American dream or lack thereof. It was cool. And the art too, the art style stood out to me as more hardcore because it reminded me of like Black Flag and MDC and Capitalist Casualties, Cryptic Slaughter, stuff like that. Like late 80s, early 90s hardcore. And they probably like that stuff too. But musically, like you said, really kind of advanced groovy death metal. More that meets the eye too, like Dying Fetus, but not in the way that you think of Dying Fetus. Dying Fetus is more shred and slam and ton. They kind of work in between grooving, and there's even more dissonant riffage in there.
Yeah.
And another thing I thought of is Misery Index, but more a little more technical on the hardcore and grind side of Misery Index and Assuk. And also I thought of, we have a lot of bands nowadays, and you said they're ahead of the curve. Of course, they're from Ohio. They have that pingy hardcore snare sound. You have a lot more bands that are just mixing that death metal and the hardcore slams, but these guys were mixing death metal with almost like Canderia type groovy parts. Like I can hear, there's a lot of depth, like you said, with the guitar work and like the bass playing. Like these guys are really talented. And then also, getting more context from Dan Gates and your discussion with him. He's, yeah, man, I definitely slept on this. I remember one time we were driving back from some location off after a small tour. It was either from the New England tour or coming back from Philly. And I think you put on one of the Ton tapes for me. And that was the first time I heard them. So yeah, man, now we're coming back to it.
And we're right back in Philly, like we were talking about before, man. All this stuff is coming together. Yeah, so Ton, I'm just gonna sum it up. Very worthy band to check out. A great discography, not too much to listen to in like one car trip or one weekend. They have three full-length albums and this Blind Follower Point of View compilation of their two demos. There's two demos prior to this that had a slightly different sound. I don't know if they were really. Those don't really fit in with the catalog as much, but the perfect place to start is the Blind Follower slash Point of View compilation of those two demos, and then go on to their three full lengths. Great band that's a little bit slept on, and was kind of right there. That Dan Gates. Hey, listen to our interview with Dan Gates from a few years ago. He talked a lot about working with Internal Bleeding back in the '90s and coming to New York and them going to Ohio, and he's got some great stories. So they were right there in the death metal scene. But doing something a little bit different, man. So I'm just going to ask Tom now to bring in a little bit of Ton with Blind Follower from 1997. And we're back now. So yeah, we talked about torture. We talked about Final Resting Place. We talked about Ton, and we talked to PH of Casket Wretch. Shout out to him. We want everyone to check out Lord Alfred's Rock and Roll on IG. Check out Lord Alfred and Warhorde, his other projects, and everything else we discussed during that interview, as well as the music that Terrell and I discussed. And look out for that new Thetis. I heard a rumor you guys are going back in the studio soon, man.
Yes, sir. Album later this year.
Hell yeah, man. If you heard a rumor, heavyholepodcast@gmail.com, voicemail number in the description where you listen to this, leave us a voicemail. We'll play it and we'll talk about it. We won't make fun of you most of the time, unless we know you personally. Besides that, I think that about covers it, man. Appreciate everybody out there. Try not to talk too much shit tonight, man. I got a little out of pocket a few times. I had
It's
to
all
slow
good.
it down. My mom, I see my mom's been watching The Sopranos. Sometimes I check in with mom and
Oh,
she's watching.
man.
So I see about 15 minutes of The Sopranos. I get a little spicy. I don't know. I start talking reckless on the podcast. I got to tone that down. I got to start watching, a little Curb Your Enthusiasm or something.
Oh yeah, they just wrapped up that show.
Yeah, man. Other than that, speaking of wrapping up shows, I think we're there, Terrell. There's no better segue than that. So listen, we appreciate everybody supporting us here on the Heavy Hole podcast. Be on the lookout. We are artists. We're not just podcast dudes. Neither of us is, Joe Rogan or whoever, man. We're not making a bunch of money off of this. We're just dudes in death metal bands. Reeking Aura, Thetis, Exsanguinated, Afterbirth. I forgot what bands I'm in sometimes.
Exactly.
One of my kids.
Well,
speaking of kids, one of my Gore Grind noise projects from when I was like 16 years old might be getting reissued that I did with Adam. Reissued. We'll see what happens with that. There's some guy's probably like a 17-year-old kid from Florida. It's like crazy who's into gore noise now. It's the younger
kids. Keeping it alive, bro.
The younger people love the gore. Shout out to all the young gore noise kids out there keeping Anal Birth going, man. We appreciate you, man. They always hit up Adam because they want to book Anal Birth somewhere. And then I handle the logistics and the details. So like Adam will pass them off to me and I have to crush their dreams. I always have to be like, sorry, like the logistics don't work for us to play a one-off show in Cleveland. We're from Long Island. You know what I mean, man?
Exactly. Yeah, come by, pop by, dude.
If we're doing a tour, maybe we can, make it happen one day. But shout out to everybody out there, man. I trust me, I tried to make all sorts of fugazi things work back in the day myself. Speaking of making fugazi things work, man, thanks for supporting this podcast. We're doing our best over here. I'm about to send it over to Tom Lee. I wake Tom up on Thursday nights. Here's the podcast, man.
There you go.
We need it up for tomorrow. It's literally Thursday night.
Get it cooking, Tom.
Yeah, but I think it's maybe does the sun stay out later, longer for him now because he's down south? I don't know. Is the weather better?
I guess it better be better.
I need an excuse to overload that man with work. And shout out to Justin, speaking of overloading people with work. Every once in a while, I still hit up Justin and say, hey, man, the podcast is a little late. I need this image, man. He's on the ball with me, though, man. I love them guys. Shout out to all the other co-hosts. We are setting up a special roundtable discussion. We're going to try something a little different here with some of the co-hosts coming up soon, man. And we got some great guests. As I said, it's springtime when a young man's fancy turns to booking obscure death metal and noise guests and putting them on the podcast. I got a few sick people coming up. I got one bucket list interview coming up this Saturday. Very excited that you guys are going to hear about that very soon coming up as well. Terrell, anything to add? Any final thoughts for the people?
Not go to mad shows in May. It's going to be crazy.
Jeez.
And we love that the sun is out.
Yeah.
Sun's out, guns out. Hopefully not. But...
Sun's out. Yeah. Sun's out. Fun's out. Funds are out because I'm going to have no money after I go to these. Dude, I got so many shows written on my calendar for May. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man. Anyway, dude, well, yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, since Amityville Music Hall's temporarily closed down, all the action's going to Shakers. It's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Shakers is holding it down, and then Vitus is closed, so you got everywhere else right now.
What a time.
It's interesting.
Who would have thought Vitus and Amityville Music Hall would be closed at the same time? And people are still holding it down. You're right.
Oh, yeah. I got to go up to Shakers, man. It's been a while.
I got to go to Shakers. It's been a while. 4 months ago, I was talking about my New Year's resolution is to go to more shows, man. I'm out here looking stupid, man. If I, it's a good thing. I can always lean back on the excuse that I'm over 40, man. But I got to show face out there, man. It's been too long. Speaking of showing face, I don't know. Is there a segue there, man? Maybe I don't got one. No, I'm not going to end it like that. That would be dumb. Terrell, thank you for joining me so much tonight. Thank you to PH from Casket Wretch for talking all that hot shit. Thank you to Final Resting Place and Torture and Ton. Go back and check out our interview with Dan Gates. That was a good one. Okay. Now we can end it. I had to have a good one. See, that was meta. I just did it again.